Greetings, everybody. This is John Loeffler. Welcome to Lifetime Income. And today's Lifetime Income is an encore presentation of a program we heard earlier in the year.
The Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to another edition of Lifetime Income.
And I am John Loeffler, and we have now successfully navigated another tax season. I bet that many of you are very grateful that it's over. Whew. And one wonders, for another year, why just to collect a tax? We couldn't inaugurate a system that was somewhat simple, maybe on a single page, like sales tax or something like that. Of course, the probabilities of that happening are probably not too good, but nevertheless, there is the talk of tax reform in the air. And there are two proposals for tax reform. There's either the Trump plan or the Republican plan. Both of that will have serious impacts on residents in high-income states. You could lose child deductions. You could lose state tax deductions. Both parties want to get rid of itemized deductions. There's been pressure on this going all the way back to the days of the Reagan era when they did some major tax reform. Remember that under Reagan, you lost sales tax and interest deductions on credit cards. That was one of the things that came out of that. And the promise is there's going to be this little swippy swap in there. They'll come out. This is how you sell it to the public. Well, we're getting rid of your deductions, but we're going to radically reduce the income tax rates here. So that should make up for it. Everybody goes, hooray. And then 2 years later, they raise the tax rates back to where they were. But you now no longer have the tax deductions. Boo. And it's interesting to note that both parties do want to get rid of the itemized deductions. Under Clinton Obama, we lost a good percentage of itemized deductions as a reinstatement of the Pease Amendment. So we now need to look at what this means, especially if you're doing retirement planning, especially since the higher tax states, thinking mostly of California and Massachusetts and places like New York, etc., will be impacted worse than some of the other states. So that's where we are. Now let's take a look at it.
It's not just that they're going after itemized deductions in both the Trump plan and the Republican plan, but there was also an article this week in the Wall Street Journal. In both plans, they're also looking at reducing contributions to pension plans, even though Congress critters get the most lavish pension plans and medical plans in the country. And so, John, they're looking at itemized deductions. They call them tax preference items, which is just a fancy word for saying a tax deduction. And so the idea is we're going to get rid of these tax deductions. And if you recall back to tax reform under Ronald Reagan, we got rid of real estate deductions in terms of the limitation of what you could deduct against your income. We got rid of sales tax, interest on your credit cards. Those things went away with the idea the tax rates would go from 50 to 28%. All the deductions and tax shelters went out the window the first year. It took them 3 years to phase in the tax rates from 50 to 28%. And then, of course, the following year, after 1 year at 28%, George H. Bush came in, and everybody remembers Read My Lips, and he raised the tax rates to 31%. Bill Clinton comes in afterwards and raises the tax rates to 39.6 and phases out part of your itemized deductions where they take 3% of your adjusted gross income and they subtract that from your itemized deductions. That got eliminated under George W. Bush's tax cuts, but then got reinstated in the 2012 tax increase that came and was passed by both houses of Congress.
Okay, well, now that we've gotten to this point, he says, how will itemized deductions be impacted either under Trump or the Republican plan? Or you can imagine, Jim, that there will be some kind of a compromise between the two plans. And also notice that removing deductions has the backing of Democrats as well.
Well, both parties have been going after itemized deductions. And whenever you hear the word tax reform, hold on to your wallet, because inevitably it's going to lead to higher taxes. The government budget deficits are going to be growing as a result of entitlements. And so the budget deficits are going to get larger. They're looking for tax revenues. How do they do that? Well, they do that with tax reform. Gee, it's wonderful. We're going to reduce your tax rates, but at the same time, we're getting rid of your tax deductions. And that's the way it's sold to the public. And then what happens is they get rid of the tax deductions, and then eventually they raise the tax rates back up to where they used to be. But here's the way it operates under both plans. Under Trump, your itemized deductions would be capped at $100,000 if you were single, $200,000 if you're married. Under the Republican tax plan, all your itemized deductions for medical, miscellaneous, property casualty losses, all those things go out. You would only have two itemized deductions: mortgage interest on your home, and it would be limited to the current limits, and charitable contributions. But you would lose your state and your property tax deductions. And for many individuals that live in states like I do, for California, your property taxes and your state taxes that you pay are your largest itemized deduction, and it makes living in high tax states like California very palatable, because at least if you're in a 40% federal tax bracket, you get to deduct 40% of what you pay in state and local property taxes.
So given that, which states would be most effective under this plan?
The states most effective at the top of the list is my own state of California, which has the highest income tax rates in the country. Our top tax rate is 13.3%. In category number two would be Oregon. They're at 9.9%. Minnesota is at 9.85%. Iowa, I never knew Iowa had taxes this high, but the tax rates in Iowa are 8.98%. New Jersey, they're 8.97%. Vermont, 8.95%. Washington, D.C., 8.95%. New York, 8.82%. Hawaii, 8.25%. And Wisconsin, 7.65%. So those are your highest states with income taxes. And it was amazing because the Mises Institute just did a study of what we call tax exodus. And 7.5 million people have exited high tax states. And just any idea, John, who those states would be other than the one obvious one?
Well, I would think it's going to be the states with the highest tax rates, those unfavorable to businesses or retirees.
Yeah. California, Illinois, and New York saw an exodus of 7.5 million taxpayers. And it's amazing because the top destinations for those that are immigrating, in other words, they're basically leaving, Florida, Texas, and North Carolina. Which is somewhat amazing because, well, you can understand Texas and Florida. We have seven states in this country that have no income taxes: Wyoming, the state of Washington, Texas, South Dakota, Nevada, Florida, and Alaska. Now, there are some states that have variations of no income taxes. And then there's also states that have heavy property and sales taxes that could amount to as much as 12%. So it's not just the income taxes themselves. And why this is important is think about an individual. Let's say you're making over a couple hundred thousand or even a half a million. You live in the state of California. At a half a million dollars, you're in a 10.3% tax rate. At 600, you're at 11.3. And then, of course, anything over that, over a million, you're at 13.3. Well, let's say you have $100,000 that you pay in combined state taxes and property taxes, because California also has high property tax rates and the cost of housing here is the highest in the country. So those two tax items are a big item on your itemized deductions. So if you're in a 39.6% tax bracket, well, let's just round that off to 40%. Well, if you pay $100,000 in taxes and you're in a 40% federal bracket, you save $40,000 on your federal tax return. If either the Republican or Trump version goes through, And what I'm hearing is the most probable one will be the Republican plan, because it raises more revenues by getting rid of itemized deductions. Trump, in effect, would cap them at $100,000 to $200,000, so it would impact less people. The Republican plan would tax more upper middle-class income individuals by getting rid of your medical deductions, your miscellaneous deductions, your property tax loss deductions. Like, let's say you live in a state, you get a flood or a tornado or a hurricane, your house gets damaged, you get to deduct part of the out-of-pocket expenses as itemized deductions. They would get rid of that. They would get rid of your property taxes, and they would get rid of your state. So the Republican bill raises more income taxes by getting rid of those itemized deductions.
It would seem, if you look at the trend, that the high tax states are very heavily populated. They have a large welfare social spending programs, and all of that is costing money, sometimes at the expense of things like infrastructure, etc. Both Illinois and California have pension problems, and that's going to just be growing for X number of states by 2020. And what's happening is these states are now realizing that they are getting squished back into the corner financially, and they just need more and more and more money. They have a voracious appetite to money. What they can't come to grips with is the fact that sometime, as Margaret Thatcher said, you just run out of the ability of people to pay it.
Well, I mean, a good example is my own state of California, and the Governor Brown just issued his 2016-2017 revenue estimates. And it's amazing. California has been very fortunate as a result of the social media revolution. They've been taking in about 12% of their gross revenues have been coming in from capital gains. Most of that started with the social media, because you have a lot of those companies. You think of Facebook. I mean, California made $2 billion in tax revenues just on Facebook's IPO. But about 12% of California's tax revenues come in from capital gains. And under the government's budget, they're projecting a $1.6 billion budget deficit. And in the next recession, they're projecting a budget deficit of $20 billion. So what California is doing, like many other states, they're looking for various ways to raise taxes. And this is just what we've seen here in 2017. They just raised the tax on cigarettes from 87 cents per pack to $2.87. So they're raising it $2. They are proposing a 20 cent gallon tax on gasoline. Last year, we passed a 10-cent tax for every paper bag and plastic bag at a grocery store. Our utility bills are going up 7%. They're up 700% from the year 2000. And we had a major income tax increase in 2010 and another one in 2012. You'll love this. There's 100 bills on the agenda right now for real estate taxes. And it's just amazing. You want to make something worse. I mean, California is already the most expensive state to live in because of the cost of housing here. But it's amazing. There's another bill. This is SB 562. It just cleared the Senate Health Committee by a 5-2 vote, and it would make California a single universal healthcare system, a one-payer system. Folks, when I read this, you're not going to believe this stuff, but it actually is true. Prop 63, it was the Second Amendment Notification Act, requires anyone to go through a background check and pay for a permit to buy a box of ammunition. They are also raising the minimum wage to $15 by 2020. There's also a bill on hands-free when it comes to your cell phone. There's also a bill called AB 1732, which is a single-user restroom. In other words, you have to have unisex restrooms. But this one, John, I think you will love the most. And folks, when I say this, I'm not making this up. This is called SB 1383, Controlling Cow Flatulence. It would require dairy farmers to insert a tube into the cow's digestive system, venting it into a backpack. Don't ask me what that would cost. I assume you're going to have a veterinarian do that. This is all done under the guise of global warming.
I've got this image of dairies with all of these cows, you know, maybe a couple of thousand head walking around with backpacks. And of course, then the backpacks have to be changed out. The storage bottles have to be changed out. And then how do you get rid of that? Because if you burn it, that's hydrocarbons being burned and going into the atmosphere. And the carbon pollution is just as bad as well. So it's like, and what kind of a drinking binge were they on when they thought this went up?
I don't know. And then there's SB 1322, legalizing child prostitution. There's Prop 57, which is to release nonviolent criminals, and AB 2466, which would allow felons in prisons to vote. So, I mean, it just gets crazy. But the thing that they're doing, whether it's cigarette taxes, gas taxes, taxes at the grocery store, utility taxes, cell phone taxes, cable bill taxes, real estate taxes. There's now a tax on the sale of your house now that goes to the state. And it's no wonder that the state's running into problems this week. Moody's just came out with a warning that San Bernardino may file bankruptcy for the second time again. And John, if you take a look at our deficit, we have lost 10,000 companies have left California since 2009. 1,687 companies have left California, and they're saying that for every one company that leaves, five others are reported to have left. And in the year alone of 2014, and this is probably following the major tax increase in 2012, California lost 250,000 taxpayers in Governor Brown's budget bill that he just introduced for 2016 and 2017 shows a projected decline in tax revenues. And the reason is we're losing companies that pay taxes, and the individuals who also pay taxes are also leaving.
Yeah, and you can see that when the companies leave, the people who, of course, earn wages as they work for that company and then pay tax on them, they leave as well. Now, speaking of leaving, I would guess that they are probably headed towards, well, let me take a guess, low tax states. What do the statistics show on that?
Basically, Arizona, Nevada, Texas are some of the top locations. And I just know, for example, a lot of our clients who live in this state who are, we're doing retirement plans, John, 4 out of 10 retirement plans of people getting ready to retire, 4 of them out of 10 are leaving the state of California, because there's a couple things you can do. Number one, if you own a piece of property here in California, the definition of a millionaire in California is a homeowner. So you can sell a very high-priced, overpriced home here in California, go someplace like Nevada, Texas, Arizona, or even Florida, and live at a fraction of the cost, not to mention the fact that property taxes and state taxes are much lower. We did a show here on Lifetime Income a couple of weeks ago with a lady that specializes in relocating Californians to other states in terms of finding property. In other words, cheaper places to live. And so there have been a number of articles in Investors Business Daily, in the Wall Street Journal, saying that basically, if this tax bill goes through, it is going to hit in a major way these high tax states, and at the top of the list is probably California. Because I mean, think about it. If you're making $200-$300, you may want to consider where you're going to retire or where you're going to work and move to another state. Because eventually, and I predict in the next decade, you'll probably see California file for bankruptcy, because we are losing companies. This year alone, Nestle has closed down its second and final factory. They had closed down one factory a couple of years ago, and they just closed down their Los Angeles factory, listing taxes, regulation, and litigation as the main reason they're moving their factory to North Carolina. That's 1,200 jobs. That's 1,200 taxpayers. And so it's one of the things that you see companies do, because one of the also things that they want to reform is corporate taxes, because the U.S. has the highest corporate tax rates. And so you have a lot of companies go through what we call tax inversions, where they buy controlling interest of another company domiciled in a low tax country like Ireland. And then what happens is the U.S. company relocates its domicile to that low tax country. It's the same thing that's going on right now, which is a mass migration. There was a analyst that I interviewed a number of years ago, Meredith Whitney, and she wrote a book called The State of the States. And she talked about the next mega trend in the United States is this inward migration where you see people from the East Coast and the West Coast moving inward to these red states or lower tax states where the cost of living is cheaper, the taxes are cheaper, or in many cases like Texas, Wyoming, and other states where you actually have no income taxes, and also the fact that the regulations are much, much less. And so it's one of the key things that we are now using in retirement planning, because let's face it, you can't earn the rate of returns on safe investments today that you once did 15, 20 years ago. So one way a lot of people are coping with having less assets as a result of two bear markets and the fact that we have low interest rates is they are using tax inversions. They're simply living or moving away from high cost of living states like California and high tax states to other states where the cost of living is a fraction of what it is in California.
So bear in mind, if you are looking at this whole issue of moving to another state, it's a combination of two. You got the Trump Republican plan, wherever that goes. And also, if you're thinking about relocating, remember, if you're in a high tax state, you want to look at your itemized deductions and especially your property taxes, maybe state income taxes, anything else that are high because you're in a high income state. Even if you go to a lower income state, as far as state income tax, you may wind up paying higher federal income tax. Also, when you relocate, say, for example, Washington State has no income tax, but they have a very hefty sales tax.
Isn't it 10%?
I don't remember what the last percentage was, but I, having seen the Washington State sales tax form for businesses to fill out, I mean, last time I looked at it, it was like 8 pages, Jim, whereas in Idaho here, it's half a page, you know, that we pay. But I'm just 3 miles from the border of Washington State. And of course, what happens is you have a lot of people that lived in border areas and they run over to Idaho or into Oregon to buy things that might be cheaper. And now theoretically, you're supposed to pay a tax on it. But yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the first things I notice when I drive over to Arizona. When I cross the border into Yuma and I fill up my tank of gas, you know, gasoline prices are a buck cheaper. And it has to do with California gasoline taxes. Oh, I love this too. One of the things California is thinking of doing is requiring you to report your mileage because they've been promoting clean energy. And obviously electric cars and hybrids are becoming more popular in California. The problem is if you have an electric car and a hybrid, you're not paying as much in gasoline taxes. One of the proposals in the legislature is a mileage tax. For those of you that live here and have an electric car or a hybrid, you could be paying additional taxes for the miles that you drive. So, you know, the state is hard up for cash and they're running a budget deficit in good times. Imagine what happens, as the governor's recent budget proposal shows, in the next recession and the way tax revenues are dropping. They've been dropping for the last couple of years. And the result is California is experiencing a mass exodus of taxpayers and companies as a result of the two tax increases, one in 2010 and a major one in 2012, along with all the other taxes that they're raising, whether it's your utilities, your phone bill, your gas taxes, or, you know, at the grocery store, everywhere they look, they're slapping on these taxes, or as they call fees, in order to raise revenues because the state is hemorrhaging red ink.
It's always interesting how when it does come to an end, because remember that it's always sold to the public under some moral argument. Usually, don't you care about people? And we can have free fill in the blank, like Bernie Sanders and free college or something like that. But of course, somehow you have to pay for it. And that means you have to beat the bejeebers out of somebody else to pay for it. And then as the whole thing unravels, the states become more and more rapacious and seize. And you know, people forget the cost of seizures, Jim, that happens under these plans. You know, people get tangled up in inadvertent laws and have money seized or things of that. So it's going to be interesting to see where it goes, but always beware the offer. Well, we're going to do this if you give us that. Well, you give them that, and guess what? They take both within 24 months. Okay, coming up tomorrow on the program, Paul Horn's going to be our guest right now. We'll be addressing the subject of 401ks. And right now it's time for our real life case study based on the lives of real people whose names have been changed to protect their privacy. So who are we talking about this week, Jim?
This is the case of Matt and Emily Curtis. Matt is age 62. Emily is 2 years older, age 64. The plan is to retire within 1 to 2 years, given their life expectancy into the mid-90s. Both Matt and Emily both have parents that are still living today. Moderate risk tolerance. And just a little background, Matt was a treasurer. He worked for a local city government as treasurer for many years. He's long enjoyed his job, but is now considering the prospect of retirement. Matt has always managed household finances and is currently worried about taxes, being a California resident, and the possibility of outliving their retirement assets. He's open to the idea of moving to a more tax-efficient state like Wyoming or Montana to help mitigate the cost of taxes. And it's one of the things that's going to be part of his budget is if he can save taxes, move to a state that doesn't have taxes, well, you just got rid of a major bill. Emily is a paralegal. She's worked in that profession for 20 years. She loves her job, but she's also looking forward to retirement, and they're concerned about the high cost of California. I mean, everywhere we look, your utility bills are going up, cable bills are going up, phone bills are going up. It's going up at the grocery store with the new tax on grocery bags. Gasoline taxes are now going up. If you sell your home, I had to tell them that there's now a tax when you sell your home to the state of California. So she would prefer to stay close to family, but she also wants to spend more time traveling. And it's how do we get the most out of our budget? In other words, what can we do to not only have more assets, in other words, more assets producing income and a cheaper cost of living. And one of them is to move to a place where it's cheaper to live, meaning housing and also taxes. So we did an analysis of their risk. They were 3.5 on a risk scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest. However, their portfolio on the risk side was mainly 6, and that was primarily because they were in index stock funds. Things that were really important to them were managing their expenses because they just couldn't see themselves living here in California and maintaining their lifestyle once they retired when they have lower income. Taxes was a major issue and basically put themselves in a position where their portfolio would be secure because in addition to pension, they were also going to need to rely on their investments. Their budget was $93,000. Discretionary was $57,000. Total budget of $160,000. Matt's salary was $158,000. Emily's was $35,000. So there was a surplus of $33,000. They figured if they stayed here, their budget would be $90,000. Discretionary would be $52,000. So it really wouldn't go down much. And Matt's pension would be $52,000. Matt and Emily's Social Security would be $51,000. So the shortfall would be almost $40,000 a year. And so what we wanted to do is take a look, and we decided by going to another state, we could move their budget down and reduce it by almost $15,000 to $20,000. Now, looking at the asset side, their liability, their house was worth about $655,000. They owed about $115,000 left on the mortgage. Matt's retirement assets were $380,000. Emily's were $460,000. And they had about $95,000 in cash. Total investment assets would be about $900,000. The real issue that came up is managing the high cost of living if they decided to retire in California, and then also mitigating the impact of taxes. And it just, when we took a look at and did Monte Carlo simulations, their chances of success were not that great. In other words, there was a shortfall. They didn't have enough income. And one of the things that finally decided to do, the best thing to do was to sell their house and relocate to another state. And that would save substantially. And in Montana, they could buy a house for a roughly about $200,000. So in addition to paying all cash for a house, eliminating a $115,000 mortgage, they would also have $300,000 or $400,000 extra money to produce income. So basically what we did is we did a balanced account for both of them, which is what we do with most people starting out retirement, because you don't want to put a lot of money in a stock market, especially when we're dealing with the second highest, most expensive stock market in history. So they wanted a fairly conservative portfolio. But as a result of the move in the excess money that would be left over, reducing and getting rid of their income taxes, secondly, getting rid of their mortgage, it would make a major difference in their lifestyle. So in this case, tax inversion, moving from a very expensive place to live in, California, both housing and taxes, to a low income place, Montana. The other thing too is they had family in that area. That's where Emily was born. So managing expenses, selling the home in California, moving to Montana, and also leaving California allowed them to live a lifestyle that they really wanted to live in, because it was a major reduction in taxes. It got rid of a mortgage payment. It freed up hundreds of thousands of dollars of extra equity that was in their home that could be now used to produce income. Just by doing that alone, that produced $1,000 of additional income. And it also got rid of over $1,000 a month in mortgage payments, not to mention almost $1,000 a month in taxes. So by making this tax inversion move from one state to another, it was a savings of almost $36,000 a year. And so this is just, John, another example of a trend that is going to accelerate with this next tax bill. You are seeing this with expensive real estate. I mean, it's almost getting almost impossible for any young couple starting out in life, unless you work for some high-tech company in Silicon Valley, to afford to live in a home here in California, because the costs are expensive, the utilities are expensive, property taxes, income taxes, everything is expensive. And it's not just the Mises Institute that did a study on mass migration, but there was also, I'm trying to think of the name of the company, if it was McKinsey, did a study on companies leaving the state of California. And there was a number of reasons that they cited, but you could guess at some of the reasons. Number one, at the top of the list was income taxes. Secondly, it was voted the worst state for business 12 consecutive years in a row. Tax brackets are high. Regulation is high. The cost of housing is high. Traffic congestion, crumbling infrastructure, and high cost of utilities. Just about everything you can think of. It's probably one of the most expensive states out of 50 to live in. So, John, it's going to be amazing how this changes politics in this country over the next 10 years with changes in the electoral college, because as states lose population and other states gain it, then they get more representatives. And especially those states that are more attractive and making it more attractive for companies to relocate. We actively have 5 or 6 states here that are recruiting companies out of California, and it's working, because just in the last decade alone, we've lost over 10,000 companies, not to mention, I forget how many. I know in 2014, we lost 250,000 taxpayers, and as a result of the tax increase. So that's one of the reasons why the governor's new budget is projecting revenue downturn in its revenues over the years. And if we hit another recession, I mean, we're bleeding red ink right now in good times. Imagine what happens when you go into a recession.
And coming up tomorrow on the program, Paul Horn, our guest for the show, and we will be discussing 401ks, which, of course, are a very important part of retirement.
So that ends this week's Lifetime Income. Folks, really, I can't emphasize this with the majority of Americans heading into retirement or retired, invest in bond funds. Please do yourself a favor. Investigate the bond funds that you own and really know the risks that you are taking, especially in a rising interest rate environment. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
Today's Lifetime Income program was an encore presentation of a previous Lifetime Income show heard earlier this year. Next week, we'll be back on our normal broadcast schedule.